Meeting will come to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but we can start with the testimony if we have any of our chief authors here. I see Representative Beard. Do you want to come down?
Madam Chair, are we rearranging the agenda?
You're the first one here, so you'll be up if that's okay.
Just for that outcome, I am ready.
And I will interrupt. We do have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And Representative Magnus, have you read the minutes?
No, but I'll assume. Move for approval.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, then, Mr. Beard.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. It's good to be here. My final stop today in this odyssey known as House File 2086. You have the file. You also have a delete all amendment. So, Madam Chair, I'm not a member of the committee. If someone would move, first of all, 2086 to the general register, and then I'd be happy to have them move the delete all amendment and speak to it.
Madam Chair, I move the...
Representative Leader.
0.86. Where does it go on?
To the general register.
Oh, right.
Is that right?
Please.
Okay. Thank you. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then the delete all amendment is in your packet also.
Madam Chair, I'll move it.
Representative
Delete
Leader.
All. H2086885.
Yep.
Did you want to discuss that? Or
now, if I can speak to the delete all amendment is the bill revised. Members, this bill started out, I think, four station stops ago as a rather ambitious bill that was built primarily off the premise of this report. The legislature in 2002 ordered the legislative auditor to review the entire scope of practices of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which is one of the most unique and successful operations in the world. He did have several recommendations to make. The delete all amendment you have of 2086 is the encapsulation of that effort. Primarily, it sets residency requirements that match Met Council and state legislative residency requirements for time dwelling in district. On page 3, it codifies the appointments process on page 3 and 4, which the governor has already abided by and initiated, but never was in statute that these are actually four-year seats. And it also codifies the actual gubernatorial practice of staggering half of the terms of the members so that the board always has institutional memory built into it. And it also does the same with the four members from the greater airports in greater Minnesota. That's on the bottom, middle and the bottom of page 4. The last line on page 4 and the top of page 5 is a new addition that was recommended by many, including the legislative auditor, that somewhere the legislative accountability process that needs to be tightened with our governance issues in the Metropolitan Airport Commission includes some sort of Senate confirmation or advice and consent permission. I had originally proposed that the entire body go through the review process and have a nominating committee process very similar to what we do with Met Council members and Metropolitan Parks and Open Space System members now. However, that did not prevail, and cooperating with the Senate author of this bill and with the representatives of the administration, we dropped out the entire nominating and consent process for all of the board members, the 14 board members, and left just the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission open to advice and consent and serving at the pleasure of the governor. This statute also becomes effective January 1st, 2007, so it actually applies to after the next gubernatorial election. The last piece of the bill is Section 4, which deals with annual reports to the legislature. Because the Metropolitan Council or Airports Commission rarely comes here asking for tax money, we don't pay a lot of attention to them. And that is one of the strong points that the legislative auditor made in his report, is that there needs to be legislative overview, if nothing else. He did not ask for, and I tended to concur, and so did the other committees, that we don't want to have legislative approval or rejection of their policies or their budgets. to continue to let them operate autonomously, but there should be some statutory reporting mechanism so they have to come here and explain what they're doing and stand for questions, if nothing else. And that, Madam Chair, is the essence of the bill. I would humbly stand for questions and ask your passage.
Any discussion? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. Could you go back? Obviously, this bill comes to us, as you mentioned, from a number of different committees, and I believe it has come most recently from governmental operations.
Correct.
Can you tell us what the delete all amendment does in terms of what the bill looked like before it, or currently looks like in terms of what are you taking out with the delete all amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, give me just a moment to find the language from the last stop. I think it's this one, second engrossment, third engrossment.
I can help you a little bit, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beard, because I know that you take out a MAC member from the city of Bloomington to be appointed, and I know that's one provision that obviously I would oppose, but what are the other provisions? I think there are others as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson and members, at the last, there were several committee, the three other committee meetings, every committee had several amendments that came on and off. The most significant ones, though, and I know the ones that are most near and dear to my friend Representative Larson's heart, are these ones. At the last committee, we added, I think it was Representative Neil Peterson's motion that passed, that there would be a new board member added from the city of Bloomington. There, at that time, that second point was there was also the nominating committee in the group at that time, and I think Representative Hornstein had a motion to add members from each of the cities surrounding the airport to the nominating committee to expand that. Of course, that has been deleted also. And there was also no meetings of the MAC, no public meetings shall happen inside of an airport security perimeter. Members, what we're into right now... It's difficult to speak to a bill, to something that's not in the bill, but I will speak to it because I think it's important, and I appreciated the spirit and the spirit of cooperation and public service that Representative Larson, I think, performed by bringing the amendment forward in the Government Operations Committee. When you go to a public meeting of the Metropolitan Airport Commission now on their standard meeting days, you have to actually park in the airport ramp, get a ticket voucher, which then is stamped for free. You get free parking. But you do get a voucher that gets you through airport security. So you still have to empty your pockets, take off your shoes, take off your belt, and get screened. This is a nuisance, to say the least. However, to speak in the MAC's defense, when they do have a large group or anticipate 100 or more people coming, they usually find a local hotel. The Thunderbird, Bloomington Jefferson High School, I've been there, hit some MAC meetings, and so on and so forth. There have been a few complaints, but not many, about going through the screening process, but just as a matter of public policy, I think we would want to pay attention for future consideration the whole idea of inconveniencing the public to come to a public meeting. This is the message that was heard loud and clear by the amendment that was adopted in Government Operations. I will say this, MAC is embarking on a 2020 plan for the next 7 or 8 years. They will be spending almost $900 million to build, among other things, a new hotel, some more space at the Lindbergh Terminal, and a handful, another 18 gates at the Humphrey Terminal. I think that we could certainly jawbone them or persuade them in some fashion to perhaps move their corporate boardroom, which is inside of the airport security now and has been there for 30-some years. So the message has been heard. However, in negotiations with the governor's office to get a bill he would actually have a chance to sign, and with the Senate, who was trying to line up with us as well, we thought it would be best to take it out of this bill. So, Representative Larson, thanks for bringing it forward, and sorry it had to hit the author's chopping block. And that's the essence of the stuff that came out of the bill.
Any other questions on the amendment? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. It seems to me, given some of what you just said, that this provision really does not have to come out of the bill. And that's why, because of the three provisions that you mentioned, that actually the airport security perimeter issue passed in transportation policy as an amendment, and then it sounds like it also passed the Governmental Operations Committee, and now it's being moved out of the bill. I think, quite frankly, we should compel this unit of government to hold its meetings in a convenient and accessible place for residents. I do have to challenge one thing, and this has been said in a number of hearings, that in fact when the MAC has a large crowd or does important business as it relates to usually noise, because that's when they get a large community coming forward to attend, that they hold them at a large hotel, usually the Thunderbird. While that occasionally is the case when they set a public hearing date or a date to listen to public concerns, it's not the case when the MAC has voted. In fact, in the most recent case, to reduce the noise package again, that ultimately was the day that most affected the folks that surround the airport. That meeting was inside the security perimeter. The facility was far too small to accommodate the folks that tried to attend. And that's precisely what we're trying to get at here. That government ought not be able to hold a public meeting behind this kind of security wall. We ought to err on the side of the public when it comes to access. And so I think this is an important issue in addition to the nominating committee idea and providing some additional representation for communities around the airport, although those were not my amendments. I think those are important as well. I plan to vote against the amendment, although I also want to say that I appreciate the work that you've done on this, and we've worked together on that. And I've appreciated that, and I know one of the provisions that I brought forward is still in the bill, and so I'll still vote for the bill, but I just can't vote for this amendment.
Representative Bernstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Larson's comments, and thank you, Representative Beard. And I know we had a chance to visit at lunch, and I know some of the considerations and issues that you have to deal with as the author. The example that Representative Larson mentioned over the summer was very critical, because this was a decision about the 60-64 DNL. I had a number of constituents that had to go through security, very well-attended meeting, and we just can't have a repetition of that. I know that the MAC has heard us on this, and I think hopefully they'll make some changes, but that was really one of the worst examples of public process that I've witnessed over the years, and due mainly in part to how difficult it was for citizens to access that meeting. So I'll also be voting against the amendment and support the bill and support your efforts at reform. This agency needs it, and I hope we can continue on down the line of making improvements. So thank you very much, Representative Beard.
You're welcome.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, you mentioned the last, must be section, end of Section 3, that the appointment of the chair by the governor is going to have to come under consent and advice from the Senate. Is that going to be a hearing that's going to be, or what does Section 15.066 stipulate as far as the requirement there that you've added into the bill? I don't see it in the original bill that you brought forward, but I see that must have come through another committee or that was added in another committee.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, Section 15, I believe, is a portion of state statute that governs appointments and confirmation processes, much like the cabinet officials and the Met Council members and so on and so forth. It's in rules and statute now, and it would apply to the same thing. There would be apparently the entire Senate. It probably would be a Senate committee, and I've never been through this process myself, that would hold public hearings for questioning, suggestions, comments, testimony from the applicant or the appointee, and then he would recommend to pass, hopefully, or not, to the full Senate, where it would be voted up and down on the floor, much like it was for the governor's appointments we just went through over the last 2 years. So that's the process. Same process applies here.
Madam Chair, Mr. Williams, do you concur with what Mr. Beard, Representative Beard, is saying there, that that's generally the process that is going to take place here? and with section 15.066 that's added into this amendment?
Chairman, Representative Anderson, I'm not sufficiently familiar with the confirmation process generally to be able to answer that without looking into it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hoffman.
Madam Chair, I just have a process question. Right now we have the delete everything before us. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's
right. And the other amendment in our packet, which is A5, is that the author's? I mean, is that intended to be a second?
Representative Hoffman, I believe that's intended to be a second amendment. We would have to readjust it. It's page 7. We would have to readjust the... Mr. Williams could help us with that. But that's a good point. But we are on the delete all amendment at this point. 562 is correct. So, any other discussion on this amendment? If not, we will vote on this. All in favor of adapting A050562?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. You better have a raise of hands. All in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? It does not pass. Is there someone who would like to move A5 amendment, H2086A5?
Not sure.
Representative Anderson will move that. And then if Mr. Williams could help us to... Well, that's right. Yeah. The other amendment's not on there, so it does work. Okay. Representative Anderson, if you'd like to discuss it and tell us what it does.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'll defer to the author in regards to the A5 amendment as it's come forward. It's talking about setting the date from February 15th to March 30th and including each reliever airport in regards to the operations of those reliever airports in the Twin City area. And I guess with that, I'll leave it at that as far as adding it to the original author's bill.
Madam Chair, as I understand, the A05 amendment is almost irrelevant now since the delete all amendment did not pass. It was actually, I believe, drafted by one of the MAC staffers to help clarify the type of reports that would come forward after March 30th. The delete all amendment did include the March 30th date, but didn't adjust the type or style of reports. And looking on the A05 amendment, I would have spoken favorably to it and would be happy to accept it into the delete all amendment if the delete all amendment was indeed alive.
Representative Beard, it refers to page 7, though, in the report on page 7.
Correct.
Mr. Williams, can you get us some questions?
Madam Chair, the amendment was drafted to the third engrossment of House File 2086. Okay. With the defeat of the Delete Everything Amendment, it is the third engrossment of that bill that is now before the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if maybe there was just a miscommunication. It sounds as though the chair, that perhaps Representative Anderson was offering it for the author, but the author really doesn't desire this amendment now. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I am not the author. I think it was one of our friends from MAC that had spoken to me in the hall, and I said I would not resist it. In fact, it helps clarify things a bit. And indeed, Mr. Williams is right. It is to page 7 of the third engrossment, because the maker of the amendment did not see the delete all amendment when he was drafting it, so it would apply to that one. However, had there been a delete all amendment, I still would have spoken fondly of this amendment. I think it does clarify the reports and help put some things in order that would make the reports more relevant to the committees that are being reported to. This is kind of odd, speaking to an amendment to a bill that... well, whatever.
So, Representative Beard, would you like us... What would you choose that we would do with this amendment?
Sure, let's pass it just for the fun of it, Madam Chair.
You're in favor of it? Okay.
Yes,
any other discussion to A5 amendment? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the A5 amendment is passed. And any other discussion? If not, Representative Leader?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, I like current law regarding the MAC. And I thought that the delete everything amendment that was defeated by this committee was something that I could support and then support the bill. Why would I support House File 2086 to go forward simply when I prefer current law and the governor is probably not going to be supportive of the bill without the delete everything amendment? Can you help me as to why this bill ought to move forward?
Representative Beard.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Abrams, that's a $64,000 question. Because that's part of the reason the delete all amendment was offered. Because as I drafted this bill, as a lover of policy and understanding of someone who understands the value of corporate and business aviation to this state, my sincere belief was that some of the accountability and reportability of MAC and its actions needed to be adjusted. That they needed to be tied tighter to this body instead of allowed to operate in a vacuum and very autonomously. However, I'm a rather bright guy and a big kid and hope to be around here for a while. And to do that, you have to learn how to cooperate with other branches of government, including the governor's branch, who makes those appointments and is at this moment responsible for the actions of the Metropolitan Airport Commission. So in an ability or an attempt to cooperate and have a bill that was workable, that could actually pass both bodies, working with the Senate author on this, and with the people who are being governed and affected, I came up with the delete all amendment. Now, I was prepared to pitch the original 2086, present that, and do my best salesman's job to everyone, that there does need to be an adjustment in the accountability factor and the tightness with which we're tied. The commission is tied to the legislature. Perhaps a little bit of Dave Bishop rubbed off on me there, and the belief that this body. So anyhow, I do find myself in a rather awkward position at this moment, but I'm wearing my Frosty the Snowman underwear today, so I feel cool as a cucumber as I sit here. But Madam Chair, the will of this committee at the moment apparently is that the delete all amendment was not the will of the committee, so I find myself back to my original premise. And I would respectfully request it to pass to the General Register, and I guess we'll have to take it to Conference Committee and sift things out, or the bill does not prevail this year. And like I say, I'm a big kid. I can live with that. My wish is, though, that we had passed the Delete All Amendment, and we'd have demonstrated some level of cooperation and even what you might call pre-conferencing before we got there. Does that kind of get to the gist of your question, Representative?
Representative Eben.
Well, Madam Chair, it does, because I thought that the Delete Everything Amendment added some accountability. I certainly hear what Representative Larson and Representative Hornstein were saying about public meetings being public, and there ought to be a way to accommodate that, but I did not support the nominating committee and the whole nine yards went along with it. So I find myself kind of in the same conundrum that you do, that there are elements of your bill where our different viewpoints intersect, and I wanted to be able to vote for that. On the other hand, the nominating committee is going to be a non-starter with the governor's office. I don't care if the governor is Rudy Perpich or Ernie Carlson or Jesse Ventura or Roger Moore or Tim Pawlenty or Mike Hatch. I would suspect any governor is going to oppose that nominating committee idea. So it is a conundrum, Representative Beard.
It is that.
Representative Magnus.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Abrams is talking about the point that I had, and that's I'm questioning this whole nominating committee in the original bill, and I'm not certain, again, that that's what we want to do. I do respect Representative Beard coming forth with the changes in this. Maybe, Madam Chair, it might be a wise idea to table this until till tomorrow or the next meeting and sit down and think this through a little bit.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, the will of the committee is fine with me.
Madam Chair, I'd move we table.
I have just one question, though. If we do that, I'm not sure what it does to deadlines, unless we lay it over for possible inclusion in the finance omnibus bill. But I was kind of looking forward to the excitement of going to the general register. But the will of the committee.
Right here for it.
Well, Madam Chair, there's another point to it, and since Representative Abrams raised the question, too. I had a question for Representative Abrams. Would you support deleting that section of the bill?
You know,
Representative Abrams.
Representative Magnus, why don't we try this? Why don't we try this? I can find the delete everything amendment. And I think that the section that Representative Hornstein and Larson was talking about was the open meeting law, which is in section 5 of the bill.
Of the amendment for the bill, Representative?
Of the bill.
Okay.
You know, maybe Mr. Williams can help me out. If we're in the delete everything amendment. It's delete everything. Why don't we do this, Representative Beard? I will reoffer the A050562, and on line 3, put in delete everything after the enacting clause except section 5 and insert. So that keeps the open meeting law provision that Representative Larson and Hornstein cared about, but the nominating and some of those other things that you were concerned about, Representative Beard, that were and the governor's office were concerned about in the delete everything amendment. They can go forward, but we keep the open meeting law or open meetings open provision in the bill. Why don't I do that, Madam Chair? I will move the A050562 amendment with the following modification. Delete everything after the enacting clause except section 5 and insert.
Madam Chair, to that motion, I think that maybe section 4 needs to be looked at too. But, you know, I'm not sure. I wonder if
Mr.
Williams...
Section 4 and Section 5.
I wonder if Mr. Williams could give us some clarification onto your motion.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, it will take a couple of minutes to put this in the proper form if the intent is to delete Sections 1, 2, 3, and 6 of the bill. It will be necessary to delete, to rewrite the delete everything amendment to make the substitution specific.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. If it's okay with the will of the committee, if we could temporarily lay this over and let them work on it and we can continue on with the other bills. That's okay, the will of the committee. Okay, let's do that. I mean, we will, thank you, Representative Beard, and if you can hang around for a few minutes, that would be great.
I'd be delighted to.
Thank you. Okay.
This is the farm.
Yeah. I'll file 2086 temporarily laid over. Do you have a... Okay. Representative Hausman. You have your... Okay. Okay, then get you in. I'm going to see you because I'm taking you first. Okay, we'll get to the next.
Madam Chair, is my motion to hold this over for possible inclusion in the...
Representative Hausman, it is to refer to public safety.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like to move your bill.
I will then move House File 1153 and ask that it be re-referred.
To public safety.
Public safety.
Has to be referred to public safety. Okay, can you take your seat?
And, Madam Chair, we all get motivated to be interested in a particular issue for different reasons. You may all recall a few years ago when a member of the press was attempting to cross in a crosswalk behind the Capitol building, and there was a very serious injury. I personally was invited by Hamline University students to experience what stepping into a crosswalk means right now on Snelling Avenue. There is a grade school across from Hamline. They have a relationship with the school, and so there's frequent moving of children back and forth, and the Hamline students wanted me to have the experience that those young children have, and they invited me out there and proceeded to have me step out into that crosswalk on Snelling Avenue. And though we know what the fines would be, I can tell you that I was quite intimidated by these cars that didn't seem to be stopping. I was told that I had an advantage because I was an adult. And they said if children had been standing there waiting to pass, that cars would have been even less respectful. So I had some understanding of it's one thing to pass a law and expect behavior to change. It's quite another if we don't include education for both pedestrians and for drivers in that. And I have Commissioner Reinhart with me today to speak briefly to this. I think is it brought by Ramsey County or
it's in support of the
team. Okay. Yes. And then we have Tim and Terry Wald who will speak briefly. And I think there's a principal of a school in attendance too, but we know you wanted to keep the testimony brief today.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, you would state your name for the record, please.
My name is Victoria Reinhart. I'm chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, and I'm really pleased to be here today. One thing before I begin my testimony, I know that you were given a House research bill summary, and I just wanted to clarify that where it starts out by saying dedicates 25% of all fines, that actually is incorrect. The dedication is as follows, so that it doesn't add up to 125%, it adds up to 100%. 25% to the general fund, 25% to the local unit of government prosecuting the violation, and 50% to the crosswalk safety account.
Thank you.
I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Thank you.
Ramsey County and the communities in Ramsey County, our Department of Health, have been very concerned about pedestrian safety ever since the law was enacted in 2000. And although we really commend the idea of giving pedestrians the right-of-way, the fact is there have been a number of problems with it.
Except that.
Specifically in three areas. There hasn't been adequate education, enforcement, nor local engineering options to make this law work. According to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, a pedestrian is injured or killed every 9 hours in Minnesota. In 2002, 1,149 pedestrians were injured in Minnesota and 50 were killed in pedestrian crashes. Our public health department, working with the communities of interest, have researched a number of different states. Specifically, Washington State's approach seems to work very effectively. And that is where a portion of the revenue from the pedestrian/auto tickets goes into the dedicated fund to provide the education, create signage, and other engineering needs to assure crosswalk safety. As I stated, I actually already went through what the dedication is, and they have found that by having a dedicated funding source that it really does provide the motorists with the understanding of what their responsibilities are, as well as the pedestrians. And it allows, obviously, for the funding for the education, enforcement, and the engineering needs. The One other thing, and at our previous testimony, we had a person from law enforcement, and I just want to briefly say that what they have confirmed, law enforcement officials, is that there is a direct correlation between enforcement of traffic laws in the form of tickets written and drivers and pedestrians obeying those laws. That may seem to be common sense, but in this case, it's, I think, even more important that people feel that they need to understand what the laws are and what their responsibilities are, and we need to be able to provide that information to them, and of course that requires funding to do so. I'd like to turn it over now to Tim and Terry Wald to tell their story about issues with crosswalk safety and how it has affected their lives.
Okay, welcome to the committee. You have about 6 minutes total, so that in mind, that'd be great.
Okay. I'm Terry Wald, and I'm a special education teacher and resident in White Bear Lake, and I'm the mother of three boys. Jack is 7, Sawyer is 9, and Taylor is 11. And we're a family of walkers and runners and bicyclists, so we spend a lot of time on the streets and paths in White Bear Lake. And perhaps it's in our nature as teachers, but we have spent a lot of time talking with our boys about safety and in particular about the puzzlement around the crosswalk law. And every time we'd approach a crosswalk, I would stop and I would say, this is what the law says, and yes, this is what is supposed to happen here, but this is what really happens. And I would talk to them about needing to wait, and they invariably would look up and say, but Mommy, why wouldn't the grown-ups do what they're supposed to do? And I had to tell them that oftentimes they don't, and that they, even as little boys, need to take some of the responsibility for their own safety into their own hands. So as you can imagine, when we got that phone call on the morning that Taylor was hit, one of my first emotions was this great sense of irony about how could this happen in our family of all families when I felt like my boys really knew what their responsibilities and rights were out there.
On September 23rd, our day started like it did every other day. Taylor left for school early.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
My name is Tim Wald.
Thank you.
Taylor left for school like he did every other morning and started his daily ritual meeting his friend for their morning walk to school. And as they approached County Road E, they were prepared for what to do when you cross a busy road. Both of these boys' mothers, are on the pretty extreme end of personal safety, and so they had been coached quite well how to cross a crosswalk. County Road E has three lanes, middle turn lane. As the boys approached, they stopped at the crosswalk and waited, as they had every morning, because in the previous 15 mornings that they walked to school together, never had a car stopped for them, not once. And so they were a bit surprised that morning the cars had stopped, eastbound and westbound, and they had bus safety training, so they knew to make eye contact with the driver, and they made the eye contact, and they crossed the street. Cars had stopped behind both of the cars at the crosswalk. But one driver, whether inattentive or not paying attention to the crosswalk markings, hadn't noticed that they had stopped, or in the police report, I guess, he said he thought they were turning right. So he swerved into the middle turn lane to bypass the cars, didn't even look, by his own admission, didn't even look for people in the crosswalk. And there were two little boys with backpacks and trumpets running across the crosswalk. Taylor's friend saw the truck first, and he jumped out of the way, although the truck hit his leg and broke his leg in three spots. He had surgery the next day. Taylor was even less fortunate. He didn't see the truck, so he took the full force of it. The accident reconstruction report noted that it's a high-profile vehicle, a Dodge Ram pickup, and it thrust him forward and then ran over him after he was on the street. And the wheel went right over his pelvis, and he was severely injured. We were called and immediately, through a series of circumstances, we were able to get to the accident site, and all the while wondering if he was alive. Can an 11-year-old survive an accident on County Road E? We knew the traffic moves at 40 miles an hour, so we didn't know at that point. When we arrived, he was being loaded into the ambulance, and we began our journey to Regents Hospital. If you've ever been on the welcoming end of a visit to Regents Hospital, it's quite amazing, although I don't wish it upon you. There was about 18 adults in yellow lab coats and face masks that greeted us, and they diligently went to work. Their professionalism was reassuring. Within a half hour, they told us that Taylor was going to be okay, but that he had serious injuries, including several fractures to his pelvis, his shoulder was broken, several broken vertebrae, damage to his liver and his lung. And we knew that it was going to be a long recovery. Taylor was admitted to the trauma unit at Regions at that point. The one question that was still left, and we wouldn't know for days, was would Taylor experience did he experience a head injury? We didn't know.
And Representative Hausman, my understanding is you were told you had till 1:15, so you've got 1 minute, and if you want time for questions, I would expect that you conclude your testimony rather rapidly. Okay, great, thank you.
Well, just as a family, I would just want to make the point that our child was prepared, and we understood the crosswalk safety rules. The boys followed all the rules, and I think children understand the rules about crossing streets because almost all parents and teachers teach that to the children. What was severely lacking in this case was the public wasn't educated. And by the previous 15 mornings of no one having ever stopped at that crosswalk and their experience that day with one driver, even when everyone else was following the rules, being unprepared, it's clear to us that we need to educate drivers better. All of us need to understand crosswalk safety better.
Right, thank you.
And I would just like to add that Taylor elected not to be here today. He wants to just be a normal kid, and his life's not normal right now. I walked to meet the bus because he's scared to walk to school now, but as I watched him leave, he's still limping. And it's hard for me to know that it was the act of one adult that changed his life. And he said, I said, Taylor, since you can't be with us today, is there something you want people to know? And he said, I just want them to know what to do so that when we're out there, we're all doing the right thing.
All right. Thank you very much, and thanks to you for coming today. Are there any questions of the bill author at this time? Representative Hausman.
My motion was to move it from safety.
That's my understanding. So no additional questions. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, Representative Hausman, would you like to renew your motion?
To move House File 1163 to public.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Hausman. Next item on our agenda is Representative Clark's House File 1049. It's my understanding that this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Clark. All right. Representative Hoppe, if you'd like to step to the stand, I'd be happy to take your bill at this time. And members, I'll move House File 1604 for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Finance Bill. Representative Hoppe, and the majority of the committee members heard this bill on transportation policy. We're running a little late today, so brevity would be rewarded.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brevity is my middle name. Madam Chair, members, this is essentially what the City of Chanhassen the Carver County is trying to put another license center in the City of Chanhassen to supplement the one in the City of Chaska. Most of you, as the chair said, heard this in transportation policy. I have Mark Lundgren, the Carver County Auditor, with me, who can answer any questions members might have. Other than that, we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Are you aware of anybody in opposition to your bill?
Madam Chair and members, I am. There's a license center in Excelsior, a private license center. That gentleman, and I don't have his name in front of me, he did call me and is not in favor of this. Other than that, I am not aware of any. Hennepin County supports it. I think everybody else is okay with it.
All right, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, is there a fiscal note to this bill at all?
Representative Anderson, there is not a fiscal note to this bill, but it does involve transportation finance policy.
Okay. And finance, I mean, as far as, Madam Chair, looks like we're going to have to add another annex location for another deputy registrar. I'm sure that's got some kind of cost, I would think.
Representative Hockey, would you like to speak to the cost associated with opening up a new office?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson and members, I believe all the costs for that would be paid by Carver County. And if there's someone in the audience that believes differently, they can come and correct me. But I think the county pays for all of that.
That's my understanding as well. Representative Anderson, an additional question?
Just my concern, I'd like to know what the cost is that Carver County is going to have to. Because I got a feeling that there's something that's got to come back to the state. You're going to have some more paperwork involved with the state. Just even though it's going to be Carver County going to be involved, I got to believe the state's going to have to incur something there. But.
Mr. Lundgren, if you'd like to state your name for the record and answer Representative Anderson's concern.
Mark Lundgren, I'm the Carver County Auditor, Madam Chair, Representative. I imagine that the state itself will incur some expense from a second location, only from the aspect of reporting and that type of thing. But it's my understanding that they are not in opposition in any way, shape, or form to this office.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is anybody in the audience would like to speak in opposition to House File 1604?
Madam Chair?
Representative Abrams.
I'm just trying to keep up. Last week we had a bill which almost tripled the automobile driver's license fee to deputy registrars and increased other fees by 80% because all of these locations were losing money, and if we don't triple the fees, Lord knows what's going to happen. And now we have two bills coming forward saying, gee, we need more of these locations so we can lose more money. Is that basically what's going on?
Representative Abrams, I'm not going to argue with your assessment of the issue, and is in part why these bills are being held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill so we can sort out the ramifications of the various proposals.
But I want Representative Hoppe and Representative Clark to know that I support both of their bills, but just kind of pointing out that there was another bill heard, and we were basically told that life as we know is going to end if we don't triple the fees.
Representative Hoppe, do you want to weigh in? Or?
Not particularly, but I'll give it a shot. And to that point, and I'll let, if the chair and the members of the committee would like it, Mr. Lundgren would be able to answer that.
Mr. Lundgren.
Well, we obviously in Carver County fully support the increase to that. there is no doubt. One of the things that has transpired, Representative Abrams, is that we have incurred an enormous amount of costs that used to be allocated somewhat by the state, with entry that is done on-site, which is a time-consuming situation, as opposed to prior years. We currently, in Carver County, are functioning just barely in the black in our license center. Take away our passports, and that may be a different situation, however. But I can speak for our board from the aspect that our board is more concerned with service at this point in time and treats it like anything else. As the auditor, I do not make money in the auditor's office. Most of that's paid for by taxes. And I believe that they would continue to support the license center efforts with or without the increase, simply because they're more concerned with service and to their constituents and the citizens of Carver County.
Representative Abrams?
As suspected, Madam Chair.
All right. Any additional questions for the testifiers? Anybody in the audience would like to speak in opposition? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1604 be held over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you.
Is Representative Clark in the room? Seeing not, I believe the next item on our agenda is Representative Blaine, House File 1732. Oh, sir, would you like to step to the podium to be recognized? I'm sorry.
Madam Chairman, Kirk Peterson of Bryce Mickelson Wealth. Representative Clark is up in Commerce presenting a bill. She requested that if you can fit it in, Representative Earhart would be willing to move it as long as it's the same subject as Representative Hoppe's bill.
Certainly. I'm happy to do that if Representative Earhart is so inclined. Representative Earhart, would you like to move Representative Clark's bill for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill?
I so move, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Members, again, this is pretty similar to the bill that we heard previously. Sir, if you'd like to state your name for the record and provide the testimony on this bill.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Pat O'Connor. I'm County Auditor Treasurer for Hennepin County, Deputy Registrar. And thank you for the opportunity of hearing the bill. I'll be as brief as I possibly can. I've got handouts, if it pleases the chair. I would just echo everything that was provided in testimony to the Carver County bill. Hennepin is in support of it. I agree with what Auditor Mark Lundgren had provided the committee. But I would just add, in this particular case, there's a small little difference. And one is that while we share service areas that have experienced remarkable population growth. The Southwest Corridor and the inner city. What distinguishes this one a little bit is that right in the inner city we've had an explosion in non-English speaking residents, the new Americans, the immigrants. 44% of the residents in the catchment area, in that Powderhorn Phillips neighborhood that we propose to serve, 44% do not speak English as their primary language. Hennepin County has experience servicing this group, and we'd like the opportunity to continue to do so. And we need your support, if you would, please, because we don't fit the 10-mile siting regulation right now. We need the waiver. Thank you.
And Mr. O'Connor, it's my understanding that your 10-mile radius is in conflict with a location in Richfield. Is that correct?
That's one of them. That's correct, Madam Chair.
And if you might state for the record the others.
I draw your attention to the handout. There are three maps. The one that is not colored just has the red circle. This was produced last year when the requirement was 5 miles, 9.5 miles, but you can see that the downtown license center is within that, the Richfield AAA, and then Bloomington, Southdale, there's a site in Rice Street, Lexington Avenue, Central Avenue, Fifth Avenue Northwest in northern Ramsey County, Brooklyn Center, Robbinsdale, Golden Valley, Ridgedale, and those are within the 10-mile radius.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill author or the testifier? Or the pseudo-bill author, I guess it is.
Someone has separated from their cell phone.
Well.
Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
My understanding is that there's so many deputy registers are allowed within a certain proximity of a location or of a county or a city. And I'm just wondering, are we going outside the rules that are set by the statute right now, by the rules?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that's exactly what we're asking. We're asking for a waiver because what we feel is the citing rules don't recognize population shifts, and we feel that the demand is there. In 1999, Hennepin did a study of residents in Hennepin County. We specifically asked if there was a site on Lake Street, would you use it? There was a significant enough response that we felt that a site there was warranted. We also asked, what other sites do you currently use? And nearly 90% of the respondents said they use the downtown or Southdale centers. So we have some confidence we will not be adversely impacting any other deputy registrars other than the Hennepin County operated sites. And frankly, we would appreciate the lessening of pressure on those two sites, if you will.
Thank you. Is there Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask, are you planning on staffing with bilingual folks? If it's to satisfy the, as you say, the language and cultural diversity of this area?
Mr. O'Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that's exactly our plan. We plan to recruit in the immediate area and staff with bilingual service center reps speaking Spanish and Somali.
Right, thank you. Any additional questions? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. O'Connor. What is Hennepin County's position as it relates to the fee increase, the bill that was heard last week?
Mr. O'Connor.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, we're in support of the fee increase. As Auditor Lundgren had indicated, we think the fee is reasonable because we've been asked to perform more administrative work in processing some of these state products than in the past, so we feel is justified. That plus, there hasn't been an increase since 1993.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say that I appreciate the continuing discussion that we'll have about this. Obviously, we have a situation where we're in a tight budget. We've got bills coming forward to increase our overhead, and yet we're asking consumers to pay a lot more to pay for a service. And I think we need to have far more discussion before we set the policy.
All right. Thank you, Representative Larson. Any additional questions? Representative Earhart, would you like to renew your motion, please?
Is this a layover here, Madam Chair?
It is.
Good. I would move have House File 1049 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation finance bill.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members.
Next item on our agenda is House File 1732, Representative Blaine. Welcome to the committee, Representative Blaine. I see in my file here I have two amendments, the A-13 and the A-14 amendment. I'd be happy to move your bill for consideration by the committee, and if you would give me your wishes relative to the amendments in the packet.
Madam Chair, thank you for moving House File 1732. I'd like to ask that it be passed by this committee and sent to the Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources Finance. Madam Chair, I'm not going to go into to all the farm lingo and the ag sector part of this bill. I think everybody in this committee, if they've seen the brief, understands this is a bill pertaining to probably the last economic engine we've got in a lot of rural Minnesota. That's the livestock sector of agriculture. Madam Chair, I believe because of time you would like probably wish to deal, this committee would probably like to deal simply with the part of the bill that deals with transportation. Is that correct?
Representative Blaine, as I asked before, I have two amendments in my packet, the A-13 and the A-14 amendment. You need to tell me what your wishes are relative to these amendments to get this bill in the condition that you'd like to discuss it.
My apologies, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the A-13 amendment is the author's amendment, and I would ask at this time that we move the A-13 amendment.
All right, and Representative Blaine, what does the A-13 amendment do?
Madam Chair, the A-13 amendment cleans up some language in here and some concern that the Association of Minnesota Counties had with Section 5. Basically, if you follow along with the bill, we strike the language in Section 5 of the bill. We also change a concern of, that we had heard as this bill has passed through the previous two committees with the language on line 18 of the bill where it says the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We're changing that language to the appropriate state agency as needed. And then, Madam Chair and members, on line 29, after the word efforts, we're inserting the language including livestock and other agricultural operations permitted after the effective date of this section. This basically puts the opportunity for local units of government that have livestock operations to be able to access or have the possibility of accessing money in that has been established that's from the bonding bill in the local road improvement account. And Madam Chair, basically that is the amendment.
And Representative Blaine, with this A-13 amendment, when you delete Section 5 of the bill, then is there any transportation finance policy left in the bill?
Other than the language in Section 6, no.
All right. Thank you. Members, I'd like to, do you have a question on the amendment?
Well, it would be to propose an amendment to the amendment. The A-14 was either going to be Representative Hornstein's or mine, and we didn't know if he was going to be called out of the room, so we're sort of prepared to suggest this together. What I would propose is to amend the amendment he's just offered by deleting lines 7, 8, and 9. And the reason being, those three lines seem to be creating a statute that gives special consideration to one industry as we're writing this, which which strikes me as being somehow carving out an exception to one industry or special consideration to one industry would be not wise in statute.
Representative Blaine.
Madam Chair, I would speak against the amendment to the amendment. We're not carving out any special consideration. This is not a direct appropriation, but a grant a procedure, and we're certainly looking at what we can do to help local units of government address their road maintenance needs in an ever-changing economic sector of the state of Minnesota. So, Madam Chair and members, I would encourage you to vote no to the amendment to the amendment.
And Representative Hausman, as I look at the bill, and if we would delete this out of the amendment, we have the project. The language included in the current law that said the project's contribution to other local, regional, or state economic development or redevelopment efforts, which I view as being very broad,
right.
And then this language as proposed in the amendment, including livestock and other agricultural operations. So I'm not sure that this limits it, but rather maybe puts a little bit of a magnifying glass on agricultural issues. As opposed to others.
And Madam Chair, I think that would be exactly the point, because, I mean, it is broad and all-inclusive, and what was confusing is you, with these words, on those three lines, you seem to do the opposite, and you single one industry out for special consideration in what was a broad grants program. So,
all right. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would echo Representative Hausman's concern because we don't have special language, for example, about the sugar beet industry. Could probably, you know, use some assistance, or even the ethanol industry. You know, utilizing these rural roads. So, I mean, I just don't understand why this is in here when you've got other industries that should at least have a level playing field when they're competing for this grant.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would you just clarify this for me and the members? In actuality, they want to take money, this bill would take money out of the local revolving fund, which we just established, which is highway monies out of the transportation, and they want to dedicate it specifically to an agricultural livestock operation. Would that be correct?
Representative Leader, as the bill was originally contemplated, there was a 10% set aside, but the A13 amendment deletes that portion of the bill with the specific set aside. So I think that what they're trying to do here in that, as the bill was introduced, we had this special set aside for livestock operations. This amendment deletes that out, but then they're trying to keep the issue of livestock and agricultural operations in front of the committee that makes the appropriations under this fund, so they're adding in the language that you see on lines 7, 8, and 9 of the A13 amendment into the general standards for the grant procedures and criteria in current law. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But again, Madam Chair, it's supposedly taking money out of a local revolving fund, which we just established, which are highway monies, which go to townships. Is that correct?
Mr. Williams, you want to take a shot at this?
Chairman, Representative Leader, the bill, the first engrossment of the bill would have set aside money in the account for the local road account for routes of regional significance, which is one of the two accounts in the local road improvement fund. That fund does not receive dedicated highway user taxes, but to the extent that the legislature has put money in that fund in the past, it has been from general obligation bonds rather than highway user taxes. The provision that would have allocated a specific portion of money in the account for routes of regional significance to town roads has now been deleted from the bill, so that the only change that's being proposed here would be, first of all, to allow any state agency to be included on the advisory group for that, for expenditures from that fund, and also to specify that the consideration of local, regional, or state economic development and redevelopment efforts must include livestock and other agricultural operations.
Representative Hausman.
I have been trying to track the A13, and I don't know if I'm missing something, but the page 4 and 5 deletions don't seem to quite leave intact a readable bill. Am I missing something?
Representative Hausman, I don't know if you have the first engrossment in front of you, but as I look at the first engrossment, I see on page 4 we're deleting or proposing to delete lines 23 through 36. Page 5, delete lines 1 through 7. In my reading of it, it would delete the entire section 5 of the bill, which called for the 10% set aside for this specific purpose.
I was misreading it.
So the A13 would accomplish that, and then I think by the A13 amendment as proposed, what the bill author is basically asking of this committee is that we just put this little line in here and say, remember livestock and agricultural issues as you make this decision about how you appropriate the money. Mm-hmm. It doesn't preclude them from using it for other purposes, but for our rural economic community and needs, it's just a little comfort language in current law saying remember the rural guys, they need this for economic development, and to the degree that it can be addressed along with all the other economic development opportunities being considered, please consider it. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, we're not talking dollars here without some significant numbers. I mean, what are we talking about here in the numbers? $1 million in this account or 5 cents? And are we giving rural Minnesota just another avenue for extracting money from some pot?
Representative Earhart, we're going to be nice today.
Well, that is nice. Let's find out what the hell's going on here.
The A13 amendment, again, would take away the set-aside for this particular segment of the bill to go to livestock road development, if you will. And Mr. Solom from the Association of Minnesota Townships is here to add his 2 cents. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Solom with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and we are supportive, our association is supportive of the A13 amendment. And as has been explained, what this is doing is just recognizing for some of the most common calls that we receive as far as road damage, and particularly with the concern of livestock operation of any size. There's no per se size limit here saying, hey, this is a criteria that MnDOT can consider. In the bonding bill that the governor signed yesterday, there's $5 million set aside for the total program of roads of regional significance. And so all this is doing is saying, along with the counties, cities, and townships with other interests, those that have a concern because of a livestock operation, it clarifies that they are eligible to compete on equal footing with every other interest or concern, and we're all competing for that same $5 million worth of bonding that was signed yesterday, which funds the regional significant account. So we worked with MnDOT on this language when the county raised their concerns. We were assured that this actually helps MnDOT administer the program by providing them some clarification as to what can and cannot be considered. It is not a mandate. It is not exclusive of any other competition. The solicitation of funds will be going out in our newsletter tomorrow, and we'll make it clear that townships that think they have any road of significance for any purpose is allowed to apply. But it is making it clear that livestock is one of those considerations, because in the rural areas that is a very common situation that we're getting.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Representative Earhart, did that answer your question?
It does, but I thought that on the, Madam Chair, on the floor yesterday, Representative Westrom was hollering at me because we were, some of us were opposed to letting the livestock transportation people tear up our roads with their excess weight, and now we're back asking for money to repair what we're allowing them to do. So I don't quite get it, but that's okay. Right. I'm used to it.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. No comment. Representative Hausman.
Well, I'd want to just pursue with your representing the township. You talked about you came with concerns. Can you elaborate? What did you think was
going to
be the problem?
Madam Chair, the concerns were actually raised by the counties, not by the townships. The townships were okay with the bill as introduced. The counties raised concerns about the 10% being... Our reading of the original bill was that 10% wasn't up to. It was an option, again, just saying... If somebody determines that this is a road of regional significance, up to 10% could be set aside. There was concern that that 10% would become a mandated set aside and somehow subtract from that $5 million. And so to address that concern, we moved it from a separate section over to just one of the criteria that is considered, along with all the other criteria in existing law. And there's an advisory committee made up of MnDOT, the League of Cities, the County Association, and the Township Association that tries to help develop how applications for this competition for the $5 million, how that money will be divvied out, who gets priority. And by having this language in here, the townships now have a chance to compete a little more equally, because we don't have the volume to compete with a county highway. So this just helps equalize the competition, and that's it alleviated the county concern that somehow it was diverting money while leaving in the clarification that everybody is competing equally for the same pot of money.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, and maybe to you, and it looks like the counties want to come up. If we then single out one industry and write them in specially, do you see any red flags? I mean, you've constantly used the language of everyone competing equally.
It's just long briefly.
Madam Chair, Representative, that language was left in at the request of others supporting the bill, because it is the area that's currently getting a lot of the attention as saying, hey, this is in the rural areas, if not the one of the most common causes of problems for the roads. And this money is for upgrading those, not just simple basic repair, but actually improving the roads so it can handle the additional weight of the equipment. And we had no concern with leaving it in there. And it was left in there at the request. It actually will build support by a number of industries in addition to livestock that supplement the livestock industry. And so we had no problem leaving
it
in.
Mr. Solom. Ms. Levereau, did you want to speak to the oral amendment to Representative Hausman's oral amendment to the A-13 amendment briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name's Carol Levereau. And counties were very concerned about the original language for exactly, Representative Hausman, the question you raised, that it would be much better to insert language in criteria that makes them eligible instead of actually allowing them access to the fund up to a certain percentage. So we can live with this, and it's, if you, no one has mentioned, this is just for new or expanding livestock operations after the effective date of this language. So we're not expecting a mass rush of applications or requests for this money.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Levereau, that the second, the phrase, other agricultural operations permitted after the effective date, do you have a sense of what that...
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, no, I don't think we're going to see a mass rush for applications. And with state aid administering the criteria and the program, we feel quite confident that although townships now will have access, the livestock industry will have access, they always did. But it's the governor's initiative for livestock operations and to try and enhance that industry, and we agree with that. And we agree with the rest of the bill.
And Madam Chair, even if those three lines weren't in, they still are all eligible. Livestock and others.
Ms. Lovro.
Madam Chair, Representative Howell, yes, they would still be eligible.
Thank you. Representative Hausman. Is there any additional questions about Roseanne Hausman's oral amendment to the A13 amendment? Because we got to keep moving here.
What is she doing?
All right. All those in favor of the Hausman oral amendment to delete lines 7, 8, and 9 from the A13 amendment, mm-hmm. say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Nay.
No. The motion is not adopted. We now have the A13 amendment in front of us as presented. Are there any questions on the A13 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A13 amendment is amended. Representative Blaine, sometimes when things get out of or through a committee, policy issues or finance issues have a way of creeping back. Is it your intent in the future to support any type of set-aside of this fund for livestock road funding in any way, shape, or form?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it is not, certainly not my intent. Madam Chair and members, I can tell you this bill, House File 1732, comes before you today because this has been a consensual agreement between the livestock industry of the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Association of Townships, the Association of Minnesota Counties. We have worked together since last summer on this issue. I feel very strongly about the fact that the livestock sector is a very important part of the economic future of the state of Minnesota, and we feel we have a bill that promotes that. So with that,
thank you, Representative Blaine. Any additional questions? Anybody in the audience like to speak in opposition to House File 1732 as amended? I'll renew my motion that House File 1732 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resource Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Blaine.
Thank you.
I guess we're going to take Representative Beard's House File 2086 off the table. I'm sorry that I missed the first chapter of this story. Representative Blaine, I'm sure that you have peace in the valley at this point. And we're interested to... Representative Beard, we're interested to find out what your resolution is to this issue.
Madam Chair, I thought Representative Abrams made an excellent suggestion when he reintroduced the delete all amendment with an amendment. And so I've clarified the numbers and the lines and squiggles for Representative for Mr. Williams, if I may speak to it, or is Representative Abrams up?
Representative Abrams.
I believe Mr. Williams has the language.
Madam Chair, the amendment to the delete everything amendment, the 050562 amendment, would be on page 5 after line 2 to insert H2086-3, page 6, line 2, to page 7, line 25. Those are the those are sections 4 and 5 from the third engrossment of House File 2086 dealing with the locations of Metropolitan Airport's commission meetings. Section 4 in the Delete Everything Amendment would be renumbered to Section 6. After that, if that amendment is adopted, then the A5 amendment would need to be readopted because it would have been removed along with everything else under the Delete Everything Amendment.
Madam Chair, precisely.
And I am totally confused, but I'm going to let Representative Abrams speak to what's being proposed.
Madam Chair, I would move the A05-0562 amendment, delete everything amendment, as modified by Mr. Williams' suggestion. And basically what this does is it puts the bill into the shape that the author wishes it, and alleviates the concerns that a number of people around the table had regarding the meetings that the MAC has within the security zone, which makes it difficult for interested parties to be able to attend meetings. So that's my amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you very much, Representative Abrams. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the 0562 amendment as being proposed to be amended? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hamel. Nice to see you. You'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Jeff Hamel. I'm the executive at the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I've observed the work of the committee, Madam Chair, and they've been diligent in trying to accommodate and facilitate a variety of needs. We've worked on this bill for many, many opportunities, many occasions, many meetings. And I only come back to you with a comment about the secured area of the airport for public meetings. And I'm very cautious in how I speak this issue today, because I don't want to sound as if we're opposed to the public coming to a meeting at the Airports Commission. But in today's discussion, I was left with a couple of impressions. I want to just share a few thoughts. I'll use noise as an example because it was referenced earlier prior to your being here today. In the noise meetings, we try to accommodate a facility that will let everyone who wishes to speak to issues speak to issues. In the area of changing noise policy or noise programs, what we have done, manager and members, is move those meetings off the airport to places, typically the Thunderbird Hotel, which is a centrally located off-airport location. To be very truthful, it's not because of the security processing that people go through, but the sheer number of folks who attend those meetings. We end up with several hundred citizens who wish to speak to the commission and listen to the discussion, and as a result, we don't have facilities on the airport to accommodate the crowds. But typically, we would have an off-airport public meeting, or then go through a series of committee meetings to a full board meeting. And in a specific example cited earlier today, it moved from a security discussion to facilities in a larger crowd. The reality is that at the meeting that was discussed and specifically identified today, everybody who wanted to come to that meeting was able to get to the meeting. Everybody was given the appropriate security clearances and passes. It did not take an inordinate amount of time. And the reality is that everyone who wished to speak to the issue was able to speak to the issue. The problem at that meeting was that the crowd was larger than our facilities. So the real issue at that particular meeting wasn't getting there. It was having enough room or space for people to be there who wanted to be there. We listened to, I think, about 15 or 20 citizens who spoke, and then the discussion became quite repetitious, but people who wished to speak were able to do so. So the problem wasn't security, it was just getting there and being heard. Let me now just leave that issue, because I don't want to debate the noise issue, and that's just one example of how citizens come to us. And there are basically one or two meetings or venues that would result in citizens wanting to attend, primarily environmental noise impact issues around the airport, and I think that Representative Larson and Hornstein both identified that as being, a common difficulty, a common purpose for coming to our meetings. The more important issue is this. To accommodate a non-secured location at the airport. I've had, since the last couple of weeks, I've gone back to our staff and said, okay, find me a place in the terminal complex where parking is available for large numbers of people, where we can build a room of adequate size that's outside security. We're talking about a $1 to $2 million expense to build a specific area in the non-secured part of the airport, or over $2 million to put in a secured corridor to go from the outside to our existing secured location. Let's talk about the practicalities here. How many times do citizens wish to come to our meetings? I went back and looked at the agendas of the last several years, pre-9/11, post-9/11. On average, for any committee meeting or any full board meeting, we have 2 to 4 typical, normal citizens. Other citizens attend, but they're people who regularly attend on behalf of other organizations that they represent. So what we're talking about is once every, I would guess, a year to a year and a half, there may be a policy decision that does draw interest from a larger group of citizens who wish to attend. And what we're talking about is having people that come to the airport spend a couple $1 million to modify facilities to accommodate a meeting space in the terminal complex so we can provide short-term free parking, which we do now, let people pick up the pass to go through the security process at the tram level and simply be screened. Today in the Hennepin County Courthouse, you have to be screened. You cannot attend a court proceeding or a county meeting at Ranch or Hennepin County without going through a screening process. St. Paul City Council requires a screening process. And there are numerous examples of people who routinely now go through screening procedures, And I have not personally, and I talk with a lot of citizens of Joint Cumberland Meetings, I have not received personally calls or complaints or written any letters written to us complaining about the process of going through the screening to get to a meeting at the airport.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Hamill? Representative Larson.
Well, Madam Chair, just briefly, Mr. Hamill, as it relates to the meeting over the summer, will never ultimately agree about whether all the folks that wanted to go to the meeting could get there. The reality is there is a barrier for folks who know what long process they have to go through to get there and decide they aren't going to go through that to get to that public meeting. As it relates to $1 million or $2 million, I think we have to continue to have the discussion. The Metropolitan Airports Commission is planning to spend somewhere between $700 and $900 million over the next 10 years redrawing the airport. It seems to me that part of that discussion ought to include how accessible the public can be to that public process. And so I appreciate Representative Abrams' compromise here. I think it allows us to continue moving forward. I've heard that the governor's office is concerned about this. No one from the governor's office has come and visited with me about it. However, and this is a bill that I had drafted, that I've had a lot of public discussion in this committee and another committee, and those folks haven't even addressed that with me. I'd love to talk with them about them if they'd be willing to meet with me. And so I think we ought to keep the bill moving forward and keep the discussion occurring. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Larson. Any additional comments on the Abrams 562 amendment as amended? Representative Abrams.
Here are the choices before us, Mr. Hamill. We either go forward with the bill with this amendment in it, or else the bill is going to be, as is introduced, with all sorts of problems for the commission and for the governor's office and for others. So at least what the amendment does is it lessens the terms of conflict between the sides. And it's a ways away from passage, and hopefully we'll be able to deal with some of those other issues as we go forward. So I would urge committee members to support the amendment, knowing that it may not be perfect, and knowing that there may not be total peace in the valley, but I think it is a better bill with the amendment on than without it on.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Abrams. This is at least the second time that we've had been in a logjam in this committee, and you've really helped to get to a compromise and keep things moving. So, on various things. So, thank you. And I think this is as I was saying to Representative Larson, when I look at sort of the overall picture in my district, it's that the public accessibility is very important to us. And you know, there's issues with the nominating committee certainly, but we can let those go and. I hope we can keep this bill moving forward.
Thank you. All right. Any additional questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, and I would think that as we go forward with this amended delete all amendment, that if there are still concerns between now and the general register and the floor, that between those people who are concerned, that you could probably come forward with something once we get it to the floor, we could work on it too. So.
Thank you. Any additional comments? All right. So I believe what we have in front of us now is the 0562 amendment as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Nay. Motion is adopted. Representative Beard, you and I had a discussion before the committee started about this bill. I'm going to lay this bill on the table, ask that you request a fiscal note on it. Once we see the fiscal note on it, we'll decide whether or not we move it forward. Thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we need to act on the other amendment?
Pardon?
Do we need to act on the other amendment?
I am not aware of another amendment, Representative Leader.
To bring this one up for that, Representative Abrams, or don't we need that other portion?
We need the
already
on. It's already on.
No.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. 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 We do have to do it.
Okay, members. I'm sorry again that I missed the first chapter of this story. I'm going to take House File 2086 off the table, and then Mr. Williams, if you'd explain to me and the rest of the committee where we are relative to the A5 amendment, we would be really happy.
Madam Chair, the A5 amendment had been previously put onto the third engrossment of House File 2086, but then the last action of the committee was to delete everything after the enacting clause in House File 2086, and that would have included the A5 amendment. Therefore, it would be necessary to readopt the A5 amendment onto the bill as amended, and it would go onto the delete everything amendment on page 5, line 3, in substitution for what had originally been Section 4 of the Delete Everything Amendment, which would now become Section 6.
I'll move that amendment then.
Thank you, Representative Leader. Are there any questions on this amendment? And you don't have to be honest with me. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Mr. Williams, I think that motion is just an indication of how much trust this committee has in your experience, wisdom, and knowledge. Members, I will then lay the bill back on the table as amended twice. Thank you, Representative Beard. Okay, the next item on our agenda is House File 682, Representative Severson. Representative Severson, I'm going to move House File 682 for consideration by the committee. My understanding is we do not have a fiscal note for Article 1 of the bill that's under this committee's jurisdiction. I think that there are supposed to be somebody here from the Department of Vehicle Services to address the costs associated with this.
That's correct, Madam Chair, and Tom Evans should be here, too. I'm sorry.
I'm Dave. Tom's not.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I'm not sure on the disposition of this. If we can get it through the committee, I'd like to go to State Government Finance.
And Representative Severson, it's my understanding that we're going to delete Article 1 from the bill and send the rest along its merry way and hold Article 1 until we receive a fiscal note on that provision. So, Mr. Evans, would you like to testify on Article 1 of the bill, which relates directly to the Support Our Troops license plate?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tom Evans isn't here today. My name is Dave Davies. And Driver and Vehicle Services has no opposition to the bill. Is there something else?
And Madam Chair.
Severson.
Can you let me give my first pitch here?
Certainly.
On file 682, the provision 1 that we're looking at, the division, spent 22 years in the military. We had in the Navy, we had a specific department called Navy Relief. And once a year, the Navy Relief did a drive basically to do what this bill does for our reserve component. And it was all the members would pitch in just as they were able and put it into this large pot. And it was administered by a nonprofit organization called the Navy Relief Society. And these people would get individual cases in, and those cases would go before the Navy Relief Society, and they would make a determination whether or not these people were enough of an extremist to justify these funds being put forth. This provision on Support Our Troops basically does the same thing. We're saying that if the general populace of Minnesota who are driving a vehicle would like to purchase a license plate and donate an additional $30 to a fund basically set up by the Military Affairs and then possibly doled out to a 501c3, that they would, through the family, basically a military family society that would oversee the needs of those individuals who are running into financial straits because their member is deployed, would be able to receive funds that came out of those dedicated funds that came because of the Support Our Troops license plate. So there is that precedence on the federal level, and I would say that we as a state can do that same thing with the Support Our Troops license plate that is currently before you right now. And there may be some administrative glitches that we need to work through, but I believe that we can do that because I believe that this is a good program to support our troops.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Sir, I'm sorry, it's Mr. Davies?
Right.
I'm sorry that I had your name incorrect here. What we're particularly interested in is the cost to the state to start up this program and administer the program, and if you'd testify to that, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, Madam Chair and committee members, we calculated the startup costs. We needed to, we're looking at stocking these plates at the deputy registrars. So we needed an initial stock of over 22,000 plates, and we're modeling this after the critical habitat plates, the loon plates that were issued a few years ago. We also need programming costs of about $5,000. The distribution of plates comes out to about 125 plates per deputy register as a working stock, and that's also calculated to keep our delivery costs down from Mincorn providing the plates. The rest of the costs are just the manufacturing costs. We have no DVS staff costs involved in this, so it's just the basic costs.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Davies, you're saying that you're using this as you're projecting or saying that you need 22,000 plates to make the specifics or the financial recommendations that you're making. 22,000 plates is my understanding.
Mr. Davies. Chair, committee members. The 22,000 is to get the stock out in the deputy register so that people can purchase the plates right at the deputy location. In the first DNR plate, when we have the deer design, the plates were not stocked out in the deputies, and so the deputies would take the applications and send it into our central office, and that would delay the delivery of the plates sometimes 2 to 4 weeks. So we want to get the plates so they're right at the point of sale.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for Mr. Davies? Representative Stevenson, you and I have had some discussions about this, and we have watched other states do similar programs, and my concern is that you're supporting a wonderful program here, and nobody wants to not support our troops, if you will. But what I am most concerned with, and it's somewhere around here, is a document that delineates all the license plates that we have in the state of Minnesota. It's pages long, you've seen it. Thank you. My concern is the precedent being set here, and while the critical habitat plates do collect money for a cause, and it's distributed for a statewide good as far as supporting parks and environmental issues, the way that your program is set up is that my understanding is the money would be going to individual members of the military and their immediate family members, and I don't know what precedent this would set. We're doing some research on what's happened in other states. We know the state of Florida has dozens of such plates supporting a whole range and variety of issues, from manatees to pro-life to pro-choice. They run the whole gamut. So I think that while certainly we want to be supportive of the troops, this committee has to really take a good hard look at the policy associated with setting this precedence and where we may be in 2, 5, or 10 years from now relative to similar types of plates.
And Madam Chair, I can appreciate that. I think in terms of the signs that you see in the yards, the stickers that you see on the cars, the movement that the people of Minnesota have gotten behind on really a small number of our men and women that are serving in the armed forces have an eager desire to support the troops and put it into more than just, signage. And I think this offers them the opportunity to actually do that, to make a contribution, a visible contribution, to get a license plate that says we do support our troops, and to make that contribution that really puts the money on the ground where it's needed to the families, members that are suffering from, from a disruption to their family time, and also to some, in a lot of cases, financial security, because these men and women have taken the time off to serve their country.
All right, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Severson, I have the same concerns that Representative Chair Holberg has. But anyhow, and I'm a veteran, and I can understand that. I do know that the Army and the Reserve components have the similar what you have with the Navy. My concern is, again, the state is becoming a collection agency, and I can just see, as Chair Holberg says, that we become involved, and I don't think that's a state function. I really, my own mind, am a concerned, and again, like I say, I'm a veteran. I think we've got some veterans' bills and some of those things that should accommodate some of this, and perhaps it should be at a different level rather than us, in a sense, going practically like the bait sales to sell a license plate to get money for those people. And I think we've got the procedures set up, and that would be my reason for objecting to this particular portion, too, that I think we're really setting a bad precedent when we start looking at the groups that come in. And in the past, some of these groups that came in, we become a collection agency. We cut the staff for the license plate people. We cut their budget and we expect them to do it, and we're giving them more work. And in essence, and just collecting money, and I can't even make a penny on it. So for that reason, I'd say that I think it's a good idea to delete that portion out of the bill, as much as I support it. But I think it's bad precedent setting.
Representative Stevenson. And Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I wholeheartedly understand, you know, the position the committee is taking on this, and I it's not my intent to set a precedent that's going to create open the box, but I do think that there's an arguable difference here in that these are men and women who are really constituents of the state in terms of signing on the dotted line and saying we're upholding the Constitution of Minnesota. So really, they are a vehicle of the state. So I guess I would argue from that standpoint, but I will stand with the will of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Earhart.
Manager, you describe what you're going to do with this bill. We're going to send it somewhere or parts of it or something.
In just a moment, I will move to delete Article 1 of the bill, and then we'll send the rest of the bill forward to its next spot, which I believe is state government finance. And then I have committed to the bill author to consider this issue once we see a fiscal note on Article 1 of the bill. And we are going to be putting our omnibus bill together next week, and we'll be able to consider the issue at that time.
And Madam Chair, what portion, if any, then would come forth in the omnibus transportation bill? Section 1?
Representative Earhart, I believe it's Article 1.
Just Article 1.
So that portion that relates to the Save Our Troops special license plate.
The Support Our Troops account, Manager, where does that go? Does that have to go somewhere for approval?
Representative Earhart, the Article 1 of the bill sets up a special fund similar to our license plates for
Critical Habitat.
The Save Our Habitat goes into a special fund and then is appropriated by the legislature. In this particular bill, and now I've lost it here. Representative Stevenson, do you want to tell Representative Earhart how the money is distributed?
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm looking at the bill summary, which only has Article 1 in it. I was trying to figure out how you were going to divide that and send it.
And I'm sorry, Representative Earhart, we only brought that forward because that was what was before the committee, but the bill is considerably longer and, in fact, contains four articles.
And Madam Chair, I'd be happy to describe how the bill works if you like, if it's necessary.
Members, we do have to, we're past our time here. I'm going to move that we delete Article 1 of House File 682. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Article 1 is removed. Representative Severson, I'll renew my motion that House File 682, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance with a recommendation that it pass. All those in favor, any additional questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Severson, and we'll be in discussion as we look for a fiscal note. And thank you, Mr. Davies, for providing information to the committee today. Members, I know we're past time, but I just wanted to give you two pieces of information as a heads up. We will be putting our omnibus transportation finance bill together next week. We have rooms reserved Tuesday the 19th, Wednesday the 20th, and Thursday the 21st. From 12:30 on, of course, we'll have to work around floor sessions, etc. I am not looking forward to working in the evenings. I will try and avoid it at all costs, but do consider that that may be a possibility as we work through next week. If any of you have major prior engagements that you would not be available any of those times, if you'd let the committee administrator, Ms. Urban, know that. I would appreciate it as we try and schedule getting our bill put together. The other piece of information is we have a new page, Ms. Arlene Rested, who is with us and hopefully will be with us for the duration. As you all know, Lucas went to the Senate Republican Research, so we're glad to have a new committee, Paige, and she's getting on board just when we're going to start having lots of fun. So welcome to the committee. Are there any other issues to come before the committee today? Tomorrow we are set for a meeting at 2:30. You received that notice a couple of days ago. There is some rumble that we might be doing targets on the House floor tomorrow, starting at noon, so depending on how long that floor session takes. In no instance tomorrow will we be meeting past 5 o'clock. So your evening tomorrow night, we won't go into the evening tomorrow, if we get done at a reasonable time on the House floor, it is my preference that we do meet for a period of time and try and get through some of the bills. As you're probably not surprised, as we get closer to deadline, we have all kinds of little mushrooms popping up that are kind of surprising us that we need to deal with. Representative Leader.
Should we keep this 1174 in our file, Madam Chair?
Yes, that would be nice if you put that back into your blue folders. And 1818 if you so desire. Are there any additional issues to come before the committee today? Again, my apologies for running overtime here. And thank you to Representative Ruth for starting the meeting for me. With that, the meeting is adjourned.